running wild. Million dead end streets in. Every time I thought I got it made, it seems it's not so sweet. Then I turn myself to face me, but I never caught a glimpse of how the others must see this fake. I'm much too fast to take that test. Never leave the stream, warm and permanent sun. So the days flow through my eyes, so the days steam the same. And these children that you spit on, as they try to change their words, they're immune to your consultations. They're quite aware of what they're going through.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Joan Van Beesler, and I'm the regional lead for our Central East region. And my gosh, you might be able to tell that the theme has changed this morning. But I'll talk about that more in just a moment. First, I want to start with a very, very old Sufi story about a little mountain stream whose greatest dream was to run, to join with the big, beautiful blue ocean. Now, she was determined that absolutely nothing was going to stop her. She danced around the big mountain boulders. She gurgled around the rocks. She swam underneath all of the gravel. That little stream went under bridges and through green valleys, and nothing was going to stop her. Along the way, she watered some green plants. She pooled under cool shade trees. She provided water for animals and birds and fish, but nothing was going to stop her in her desire to join with that beautiful blue ocean. Nothing until she reached the big desert. The big desert. Now, that desert extended as far as the eye could see, vast stretches of dry, hot, burning sand, no green plants for her to water, no animals to come and water by her side. No green shade trees to pool under. No, there was not even boulders to dance around or gravel to gurgle around. Sheets of shimmering above the surface of the sand, and everywhere that little stream looked, there was desolation and there was death. It was the most horrible sight she had ever seen. And there was no way to flow around it. The desert stood between that stream and the big, beautiful blue ocean that was her desire. There was nothing she could do but try to cross that wasteland. So mustering her confidence as best she could, that little stream started to cross the desert. But all of her waters disappeared into the sand. Again, she gathered herself up as best she could, and she leapt out into the desert, and the sand swallowed her waters again, and again, and again. She was very disappointed. No, this was very frustrating, and the little stream was very angry and very, very afraid. And then suddenly, she heard a voice in the wind. And the voice said, "The wind crosses the desert. A stream can cross too." The little stream protested, "Well, the wind can fly, and I cannot." The voice responded, "You must change. Let yourself be absorbed by the wind." "No," cried the stream. "I want to remain the same stream I am now. I am happy gurgling around gravel and rolling around boulders. I want to stay the way I am now." "That's not possible," said the wind. "But your essence can be carried forward by the wind and become a stream again. You've forgotten your essence. You've forgotten your soul." Then the little stream remembered dimly that long ago she had once been held in the arms of the wind. And then bravely she let herself evaporate into vapor and rise into the arms of the wind as a cloud, and the wind carried her gently across the desert and then let her fall gently as rain in the far mountains. And there she became a stream again, even bigger than before, and continued her journey on to join the big, beautiful blue ocean. Now sometimes, like our little stream, we have to let go of those things that keep us stuck, that swallow our waters in the desert, that keep us from growing, and sometimes we have to change if we are truly to become what we should be. Long ago, in a galaxy far, far away, life was different. Or at least we thought it was different, right? And that wasn't that long ago. It wasn't that long ago that congregations were different. Now, the popular church consultant Lyle Schaller once said back in 1994, he said, "Next year is 1995. The trouble is that too many congregations are operating like next year is 1955. The world has changed dramatically during those last 60 years. Unfortunately, I say this with sadness, too many of our congregations of all faith traditions, including our own, are still functioning out of a basic 1950s worldview and a framework, with a passing nod to maybe a few unavoidable changes that they've had to make. Now, a tremendous number of factors are different now than they were in the 1950s. Our society, our world, got a whole lot more complex over the last six decades. Complex economically, politically, socially, ethnically. The makeup of families and households, for example, has diversified exponentially. Very few congregations in the 1950s had a singles ministry. Fewer still had a ministry for divorced persons or those who'd lost a spouse. Blended families were not on the radar screen. Multicultural families ignored. Single, never married parents were marginalized. And same-sex families, forget about it. But things have changed. Amen. Things have changed. And a lot of current religious leaders are saying that change is coming to our American churches. They say change is ahead. We have to prepare. I got news for them. Yeah. Change has already come. Change is here. Change has happened. And we're playing catch up. The future is not ahead of us. The future is now. Sign of the times. The Alban Institute, maybe you've heard of that one. That was a venerable bastion of mainline religious research, consulting, publishing, etc. And it closed its doors just a little over 2 years ago. All American religious communities are having to learn to adapt, to change, if they want to survive, let alone thrive. And like our little mountain stream, congregations have to decide, too, if they are going to change to meet the new environment or be swallowed up by the desert. Now, I started researching changes in American religion in response to this statement by the church historian Diana Butler Bass. She said, something startling is happening in American religion. We are witnessing the end of church, or at least the end of conventional church. As a minister, and I have to admit, I have a stake in the continuation of the church, of our congregations, right? Yes, even the conventional congregations. So this quote in her book caught my eye, caught my attention right away. And that's why I'm here today, this week. So let me tell you why you're here this week. It's an outline of what we're going to be looking at. You know, changes here. Today we're going to look at an overview of some of the big, larger social trends that are impacting our American congregations and our life together in faith communities. And we're going to be looking at how people react to these. Tuesday, we're going to look at the fastest growing and now the second largest religious group in the United States, those with no religious affiliation, the nuns, second largest. On Wednesday, we're going to explore some of the ways young adults in America construct and articulate their own religious worldviews for the 21st century and how big generational shifts are changing marriage and family patterns like crazy. Thursday, we're going to look at the increase of ethnic and religious diversity and how that is shifting our larger religious culture. And then on Friday, we're going to look at new ways faith traditions, including our Unitarian Universalists, are reaching out beyond their walls, creating new strategies to cope with and thrive in this changing environment. Now, some of these topics, bless your souls, are going to be a bit hard to hear. There's some hard truth in this stuff, some difficult realities in our changing society that we got to face. It's not 1955. But we can't adapt to meet the challenges if we don't know what they are and if we don't understand how they're operating. So at times, I may say some things that are a bit of a downer. Okay, a little Debbie Downer here for a couple of days. But I am really, truly optimistic at my core
about our congregations and Unitarian Universalism, and you will see that by the time we're through the end of the week. Now, those of you who know me know that I can talk till the cows come home, but there are no cows here. Okay. So I'm going to moo. Bless you. Not many cows here. So I'm going to try something a little different with these theme talks this week. I'm not going to talk that much. This may be the most that I talk. Instead, I'm going to bring you some stories using short video clips, stories from real people facing religious and cultural change in their lives. I'm going to bring you some stories from some experts. I'm going to bring you some stories from ordinary people. And this means that we'll have a little more tech than usual. So if you can't see that screen, you might want to scoosh in, okay, or shift. We'll also have some time for discussion and questions each day in the talk back. And if we can do it in the morning, we'll do some in the morning. And in the afternoon, I have some longer videos and some other discussion questions for talking and really exploring how this stuff impacts us and our congregations. Okay, come on. Thank you. Little tech, right? Now, as you can expect, there are tons of books describing and analyzing all of these changes. And I've used a lot of this material in preparing these talks this week. I will give anybody that wants it a bibliography of books and a bibliography of absolutely wonderful online materials, but we'll do that in the afternoon, so I'm not going to go through all of that right now. So let's get into it. Religion data geeks, of which I'm one, everywhere rejoiced in May 2015, just 2 months ago, when the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life released its newest study of the American religious landscape. Pew made waves a couple of years ago when it published a sweeping report that began to point to the fact that there was a rise in the number of unaffiliated, religiously unaffiliated people, and we'll call those nuns, that increasing numbers of American adults have no religious connection whatsoever. And now this May 2015, this study updates that massive Pew study from 2007 and gives us some real trend information, because they did this trends over the 7 years. So what does the Pew report say? Well, for starters, the nuns are still rising. Since 2007, 19 million Americans have joined the ranks of the non-religious. 19 million. That's 23% of adults, trending up from only 16% in 2007. The little graph shows that right there. Okay. Protestant faiths, let's see. There's a lot of loss in a lot of other faith traditions, Catholic, mainline Protestant mostly. Now, Pew is pretty much the gold standard for this kind of data. But for what it's worth, the decline of religious affiliation is also backed up by a number of other similar surveys from the Barna Group and CBS and Leadership Network and Faith Formation 2020, and you can name a ton of them. So it's not just Pew saying this. Younger generations continue to lead this move away from traditional religious practices, with about 35% to 36% of millennials, young adults, claiming no affiliation. That's more than a third. And perhaps more surprising, the new report from Pew shows that every generation, including aging baby boomers, has seen an increase in the number of unaffiliated adults just since 2007. Baby boomers have gone from 14% unaffiliated to over 17% unaffiliated. So, my friends, the waters are still churning amidst all this sea of change in American religion, and there is no sign that this is going to slow down. You can see, let's see, you probably can't see that, but here is 2007. Here is unaffiliated. Unaffiliated are now the second largest group in America, a religious group in America, right under evangelical Protestants, but more so than Catholics, mainline Protestant, and non-Christian. It's a change. It's huge. This is just another different view, the statistics on it, and we can talk about those this afternoon. But one thing to keep in mind is that since the days of the Pilgrims and our Puritan ancestors, American religion has been a majority Protestant situation, a majority Protestant country. And if you include the evangelical and mainline and historic black Protestant churches in that, it has dominated our culture. But in 2014, we became a minority Protestant country. Protestants are now only 46.5% in the country. And that's a huge change for society. It's a huge change. Protestants are only 46.5%, and that includes all those Protestant groups. And I believe that this change, this major cultural change, is at the root of a lot of the anxiety and churn and dis-ease that we find throughout so many of our faith traditions, including Catholics today. And this quick little chart, we'll do more with it this afternoon, shows the rates at which people are leaving and joining different religious groups. There are now more than 6 people leaving the Catholic Church for each 1 person that joins. As a former Catholic, I'm in that number, right? And there's more than 4 people becoming unaffiliated for every 1 person that leaves the nuns and joins a congregation. These are just huge, huge ratios. Now, in response to the Pew survey results from May 2015, PBS conducted a short interview with Alan Cooperman, who's the director of religious research for the Pew Center, and the Reverend Sarah Jones, Serena Jones, president of Union Theological Seminary in New York. So I'm going to show a little video clip now in which they discuss the major findings of this report and the effect that this is having in terms of broad social change on religion in the United States and even around the world.
Now to surprising new findings about our changing religious landscape and how and if we believe. Jeffrey Brown has our conversation.
The U.S. remains an overwhelmingly Christian country. That hasn't changed. But a new survey shows a significant drop in the number of Americans who identify as Christian. The survey was done by the Pew Research Center. It showed that in 2007, 78% of Americans identified as Christian. By last year, the percentage had dropped to under 71%. Those years have seen a dramatic rise in the number of Americans who say they are religiously unaffiliated, from 16 to nearly 23%. The largest drop was in mainline Protestant denominations, but the number of Catholics also fell. Several non-Christian religions, Islam and Hinduism, saw modest gains. Alan Cooperman is here. He's the director of religious research at Pew. Also with us is Reverend Serene Jones, president of the Union Theological Seminary in New York City. And welcome to both of you. And Alan Cooperman, let me start with you. One aspect of this that might surprise people is just how widespread this drop is. Did that strike you?
Absolutely, Jeff. I mean, I think the important thing for people to realize is this is really widespread, broad-based social change. It's taking place not just in the big cities or in the Northeast. It's taking place in every region of the country, including the Bible Belt, among men and women, among blacks, Latinos, and whites, among older people and younger people, and among people with college degrees and those with only high school degrees.
And Dr. Jones, does it jibe with what you see happening around you? Are you surprised at all?
Yeah, it's surprising to see the statistics lay it out so clearly, but at another level, it's not surprising at all. It's exactly what we all look around and see when we walk down the streets of New York, or I'm from Oklahoma when I walk through the fields of the small town I grew up in. It's the reality of the U.S. we live in today.
Tell me a little bit more. What do you think explains it?
Well, it's very interesting. At Union Theological Seminary, we're seeing the unaffiliated, this now growing group, fastest growing group, actually walking through the doors of seminary. So I have an occasion quite often to talk to them about why they have left religious communities and what it is about spirituality in general that seems to still attract them. And I think one of the reasons why we're seeing the bigger drop in a mainline than we are in the evangelical, for instance, is that in a lot of mainline communities, the line between what it means to be in the church and out of the church is a very fluid line. And we see the unaffiliated, you know, perhaps coming back to church once or twice a year, not quite sure what they think about religion. Whereas in evangelical communities, that demarcation is much sharper. And the pressure not to leave the community is greater. I think it's interesting in a mainline context to ask, what are the incentives to stay? And I think it's causing the mainline churches to do a lot of soul searching. First of all, to figure out why people are leaving. But secondly, to ask this really interesting question, is it always bad that churches shrink? And those are sort of interesting political and theological questions that the survey doesn't touch upon, but I think we're being prompted to deal with.
Let me ask Alan Cooperman about what the survey does touch on, the unaffiliated, this rise, because it too is fairly widespread, right? We have a graphic of age demographics. Tell us about that.
Well, it's especially concentrated among younger generations. So while it's true that it's taking place among older adults as well as among younger adults, it's really startling. Among the youngest millennials, 36% are unaffiliated, whereas in the country as a whole, it's now 23%. Among older generations, it's much smaller percentages. So a lot of what's happening, Jeff, is what we call generational replacement. It's a nice way of saying that the older generations, which were very heavily Christian, are passing away, and they're being replaced by younger cohorts that are far more unaffiliated, not only than the older generations are today, but than those older generations ever were.
And let me stay with you, because this is another question that follows. Is this an affiliation or denominational type issue, or is it an issue of actual religious faith? How much do we know about that distinction?
Oh, these labels matter. Now, of course, within every religious group and within every group of people who identify themselves as Christians, there is a spectrum. There are people who don't believe, and there are people who are very strong believers. There are people who attend church regularly and people who seldom or never go. Within every group, there's a spectrum. But for sure, Jeff, those who are unaffiliated are much less likely to attend religious services. They pray less often. Religion is less important to them. And there are also political concomitants. For example, the unaffiliated as a whole lean almost as strongly Democratic as white evangelical Protestants lean Republican.
Well, Serene Jones, you asked that question about how much this matters to particular churches and particular denominations. Can you begin an answer here for us?
Well, it's a challenge to all the denominations, the mainline in particular, the most familiar with the Union, to ask why this drift is happening. But I think one of the biggest challenges when asking that question is to say, look, religion is not like going to, you know, it's not a campaign, it's not a sport event, it's not about numbers. It is, though, interesting to look at demographics and say, what do they tell us about the world in which these religious communities find themselves? And one of the interesting things I'm seeing at Union, and the demographics in the new study bear this out, is the religiously unaffiliated are growing in numbers, but we're also seeing an uptake in the numbers of Pentecostal and charismatic black and brown Christians coming to seminary. So at the two ends of the spectrum, we see growth, where in the middle, we're seeing a flattening and at times a decline. So what does it mean that at both of these, they would appear to be different ends of the religious spectrum with expression, with relation to the way they express their faith, are both sort of taking a hold of this younger generation?
You know, Alan Cooperman, I want to ask you about a separate Pew study that I saw slightly earlier, but it suggests that this U.S. path differs from the rest of the world. Another survey suggested that the world is becoming more religiously affiliated.
Yeah, the United States is on a path that in some ways looks similar to what's happened in Western Europe, what's happened in other parts of the developing world, where secularization has been taking place, where the unaffiliated are growing. But you're absolutely right. The fastest growing parts of the world, in terms of population are places like sub-Saharan Africa, South Asia, and these are places where almost everybody identifies with a faith. And so they are somewhat contrary trends. On the one hand, the world population as a whole is over time becoming, if anything, more religiously affiliated, while Western Europe and the United States are becoming less. And that does raise very interesting questions. Will we be able to understand each other in the future?
And very briefly, do you expect what you see happening, the trends here in the U.S., to continue?
Well, on demographic grounds, yes. Of course, there's a great deal that I don't pretend to be able to predict. But when we see the younger generations increasingly unaffiliated, and even the younger millennials more unaffiliated than older millennials, I see no reason to think that this is, at least in the immediate future, going to turn around. 50 years from now, 100 years from now, I can't possibly know.
We'll talk then. Yeah. Alan Cooperman and Dr. Serene Jones, thank you both very much.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Go. That is a quick and wonderful little summary of some of these major changes. Now, the Faith Formation 2020 Resource Center, which is a project of Lifelong Faith Associates, research group, has identified some of the major driving forces currently at work in changing American society and our congregations. You'll know my little driver up in the corner there, yes. But these are the elements that we're going to be using then throughout this week. These are what we're going to be exploring. The growing number of people with no religious affiliation at all, the nuns. The increasing number of people who are becoming or say that they are spiritual but not religious, and what the hell does that mean? We're going to look at the declining participation in all faith traditions. We're going to look at increasing diversity and pluralism in U.S. society, which is accompanied by an increasing influence of individualism on religious identity choice and community life. The fifth area is changing patterns of marriage and family life and children. Six is declining family religious socialization. That's one you haven't thought about for a while, I would imagine. Seven is aging baby boomers. Yay. And then eight, the increasing use of digital communications, web technologies. And what is that doing to our faith communities? So all of these are working to shape our congregations and the realities that we're facing today. And as I said, those are some of the major topics that we're going to be using throughout these discussions. Now, there's no doubt things are changing, and these trends are impacting American religion. But we have faced changes in our religious culture before. It's common misperception that we have always been a Christian nation, quote unquote. But truth is, we've had a number of different swings in cultural religious identification over the centuries. Now, very early in our history, in the 1600s, it was not all that common for folk to belong to or even attend a church. Only one-third belonged to a church in the 1600s, only one-third of the folk in the country. Well, it wasn't even a country then, but we have experienced a number of different religious movements and semi-religious movements throughout American history. We know that during the Revolutionary War, for example, it was less than 15% attended church. But, you know, when we think of spirituality as a facet of American social and cultural life, we have to recall some of these changes we've gone through. You know, the various forms of psychic medium popularity in the early 20th century, Swedenborgianism in the late 1700s and 1800s, our own Unitarian Transcendentalist movement in the early 19th century, the Theosophical Society that was there in the 19th century. I mean, these are some major religious forces that have come and some of them have gone. A new thought movement that included Christian Science and Unity Church and the Church of Divine Science and the Jewish mystical tradition of the Kabbalah and the Islamic tradition of Sufism
are understood to be vehicles for cultivating deeper religious experiences and ways of knowing. And these are also found in the greater American mix of religious traditions. We have faced change before. We have faced change and diversity before. A number of historic events, as well as generational shifts, are contributing to all of this churn. And I want to show you a clip now from a CBS documentary from 2 years ago. Diana Butler Bass is the scholar that appears in the clip, and that's her picture up there. She is a historian focusing on history of American religion and a leading voice in progressive Christianity. She is currently an independent scholar. She has written tons of books that have won awards, but the one that particularly concerns us right now is Christianity After Religion. It's the title of the book. Now, in this little clip, she's going to outline four major events that have triggered some of the change in the American religious scene. Very quickly, 9/11 changed the way we view people who are really dedicated to their religion. We think that religion causes people to become unbalanced and to become terrorists. Roman Catholic sexual misconduct scandal changed the way we look at a lot of different elements of our religious traditions, not just the Catholic Church. The LGBTQ acceptance in society has changed the way a lot of people look at religion. And then the strength and power of the religious right that has come and gone and come and gone again. Also note in this little section that she talks about the Amish and Unitarian Universalists. It talks about Unitarian Universalists growing. And the May 2015 Pew survey has some interesting statistics for us. It supports the idea that more people are self-identifying as Unitarian Universalist, which is wonderful. We have had an increase. We've grown from 54,000. We've grown by 54,000 in the last 7 years, according to Pew. And we're up to 735,000 folk that identify as UU. Unfortunately, we're not seeing those people in our congregations. They're only saying this to Pew. So this is something, yeah, we're not seeing it in, we're not seeing it in the February data that you all send into the UUA. So this is one of those little intriguing things that I think we need to explore a bit further. But meanwhile, let's hear what Diana Butler Bass says.
The first 10 years of this new millennium have been stunning. In a very real way, we walked into the year 2000, and everyone expected that religion would blossom, that it was going to be a great time for religious institutions. But in quick succession, you have four historical events. You have the 9/11 attacks, and religion really becomes the enemy. Is that most people believe that religion was what motivated the hijackers, and that religion always causes people to become unbalanced and perhaps terrorists and murderers. And then that was quickly followed up just 6 months later by the Roman Catholic sex abuse scandal breaking.
Father Martin O'Loughlin had an affair with
take very seriously any observations and recommendations.
Against a high-ranking official in the archdiocese.
Which just destroyed the heart and soul of Catholics across the world, but really had terrible, traumatic effects here in North America, where the scandal first broke.
Legal settlements have cost billions of dollars.
The third event was the quarrel that mainline and liberal churches are having around the role of gay and lesbian folks in their churches.
Stand up for Jesus.
More than 2,500 American Episcopalian conservatives gathered in revolt against electing New Hampshire's Gene Robinson to be the denomination's first openly gay bishop.
And the reason that this was difficult is that it underscored the narrative that church people are nasty and that they like to fight.
You're not answering my question.
Okay, we still have the reality of a general convention that has approved the blessing of same-sex unions, and those bishops and dioceses that have approved that, they need to be disciplined.
And then the fourth piece of the early 21st century is a story that has been going on for quite some time, but in some ways culminated in 2004 with the second election of George Bush.
I, George Walker Bush,
do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
And that was the strength and power of the religious right. The religious right is an example of what happens when you win the battle but lose the war. Or, to use the words of Jesus, you know, you can gain the world but lose your soul. And that's really what happened with the religious right. I don't think that any religious group has recovered yet in a meaningful way from the suffering and the pain and the confusion of those events.
While faith communities deal with the aftermath of the last decade, two religious traditions show steady growth: the Unitarian Universalists and the Amish.
The Amish are successful for two reasons. One is they have a very high birth rate right now, which is unlike most other Americans. But the Amish are also attracting converts, people who are opting out of too much choice, want something that is very specific and very contained and very communal and very clear and very distinctive. And the Amish offer that.
It's a historic opportunity for Unitarian Universalists because our values very much align with the values of this emerging generation.
Unitarian Universalism is a tradition known for its inclusiveness and its social justice work.
People who are open, respect diversity, respect different sources of religious inspiration, that's who we are. That's who we've always been. We have accepted gays and lesbians and women into positions of leadership for a long, long time.
Back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, I think a lot of people came to us fleeing Orthodox faiths, and a lot of them didn't want to hear about God, and even the language of spirit was uncomfortable for them. Now, I think more and more people come to us out of a sense of frustration and disillusionment with a very secular, soulless society, which emphasizes the bottom line, which emphasizes reason to the exclusion of all else. I think the genius of Unitarian Universalism is that we recognize head and heart and spirit, that we are tough-minded and rational on the one hand, but we're also open to the stirrings of spirit.
And I've got strength like a mountain.
In the pews of my church on a Sunday morning, there are atheists, there are agnostics, there are Christians, there are Buddhists, there are seekers of all kinds, people who don't know what is. But that's fine, because at the end of the day, life is just one big mystery, and what we really need to do is bow to it. But we have some great conversations here.
Food for thought, food for thought.
Because we have such diversity.
Wendy again, sorry.
Wendy, Justiana.
And I think that's both the genius and the challenge of Unitarian Universalism.
What's your name?
Travis,
right. Because it's easy to hang out with people that you all agree with, but to hang out with people that you have some sometimes very fundamental disagreements with, and to love those people.
Mi amiga.
And to show up for them when they need a hand. That's a wonderful challenge and a wonderful mission.
So we are growing. According to Pew, yes. Along with the Amish. Now, when we talk about change in society, change in our culture,
in our churches. We have to remember that there is a response pattern, a process of emotional reaction to change that all people go through. I mean, all people go through this. Even if it's change we like, even if it's change that we work to bring about, we still experience an emotional reaction when things actually become reality. Church consultant Gil Rendell called it the roller coaster of change. And it begins with the fact that we hear some change and we go, you know, like Christmas, we hear about it and we think, ah, presents at Christmas time, we're excited a little bit. But then the shock of the fact that things are going to be different really sets in. You can see that up there at the top. Oh, dear. Come back, you. Up there at the top. Change. Then we go into some denial, you know? Well, it's not going to really change. And then some confusion, some despair, fear, anger, blame. I mean, all kinds of negative emotions, just like any other grief period in our life. And then we get to the bottom of that, where we have to decide whether we're going to go with the change or not, whether we're going to stick with it or leave. And that's at the bottom of that roller coaster. It's that decision point. Now, if we stick with it and we decide to move with it, then we can move into acceptance and some problem-solving skills and searching for new meaning and gaining hope and even excitement about change. Now, this roller coaster happens to everyone. It happens to everyone, but people go through the process at different rates depending on who they are. Some will go through this process in a matter of a few minutes after hearing the change. Others will take a few weeks, others a few months or a few years. Some people get stuck. Now, there are a number of ways that we are able to help people move through this roller coaster of change. There are some things we can do to help people get unstuck. We can be clear about the change and the new visions that we have and why it's needed. As congregational leaders, we have to keep this in mind. During shock, we can be patient and listen to folk, so we can do our own bits of pastoral care. During anger and depression around change, we can listen and empathize and explain the need for change in a calm, patient way, not in a conflictual manner. At that bottom point of the whole roller coaster, the hang-in point, then we have to really ask people, are you willing to commit? Are you willing to move forward? You have to specifically ask them. And then we involve people in the new reality. We ask them to participate. We provide rewards for their participation. We invite them into envisioning the new way of being. And that's the way we create hope and beloved community for the future. Now, all of the change in society, in American religion, things like declining attendance and growing ethnic diversity and the rise of the unaffiliated and families and children and the numbers of decline there, and all of these contribute to a sense of what I say is growing anxiety in American society, in our faith traditions, and that's part of that roller coaster of change. Now, that anxiety greatly raises the stakes when it comes to discussions around differences in social values and life issues, differences in social views that used to be tolerated and absorbed within a larger congregational life now become flashpoints of conflict. We see this in a number of faith traditions, increased conflict over religious and social differences. And some of these conflicts are creating denominational realignments, like we just heard about a little bit, a phenomena where congregations, whole congregations, are moving from their own denomination into some other denomination that is more conservative or in a line with their feelings. And that includes Presbyterians, Episcopalians, even the Seventh-day Adventists just had a controversy about ordaining women and voted not to ordain women, part of that denial stage on the roller coaster. Now, this afternoon,
We're going to be looking at some changed views of homosexuality and how those have contributed. We're going to be looking at a couple of videos around how the radical right, my friend Bill O'Reilly, and others of his ilk are reacting to this and what that contributes to this mix as well. So I realize that our time this morning is up, but I want you to think about those changes that you've experienced and where you are in the roller coaster of change that's occurring in your life and your congregation. And I'll see you tomorrow.